Iowa's congressmen are offering only conditional support for President Obama's call for military action against Syria. What message do you want to send to your congressman? It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Syria dominating the political landscape on this Politics Wednesday. This hour, we want to discuss how Iowa's congressional delegation is likely to vote on the question of possible military action in Syria. Also, what are the arguments on each side? And why did President Obama choose to turn to Congress? And how will his decision affect the power of the presidency at home and abroad? Our analysts, Jim McCormick of Iowa State University and Chris Larimer of the University of Northern Iowa. Join our discussion with your thoughts after this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Syria dominating the political landscape on this Politics Wednesday, and here to talk about Syria mainly, but some other things thrown in our political world. Jim McCormick, professor and chair of political science at Iowa State University in our Ames studio. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. And good afternoon to Chris Larimer, associate professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa in our Cedar Falls studio. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you, both of you, on. And let's dig right into it, because obviously Syria front and center when we talk about politics. And what's the political buzz, not only in Iowa, but across the nation, across the world? In a press conference this morning, President Obama said the credibility of the international community is on the line in the debate over a response to the alleged use of chemical weapons in Syria. And this is while on a visit to Sweden. The president said, in this case, where U.S. security is not under immediate threat, Congress shouldn't be let off the hook in making a difficult decision.
I think it's important for us to get out of the habit in those circumstances. Again, I'm not talking about circumstances where our national security is directly impacted, we've been attacked, et cetera, where the president has to act quickly. But in circumstances of the type that I describe, it's important for us to get out of the habit of just saying, well, we'll let the president kind of stretch the boundaries of his authority as far as he can. Congress will sit on the sidelines, snipe. If it works, the sniping will be a little less. If it doesn't, a little more. But either way, the American people and their representatives are not fully invested in what are tough choices. And we as a country and the world are going to start have to take tough choices.
Secretary of State John Kerry testified before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee yesterday, making the case for a limited strike on Syria.
This is not the time for armchair isolationism. This is not the time to be spectators to slaughter. Neither our country nor our conscience can afford the cost of silence.
And during his testimony came this exchange with Kentucky Senator Rand Paul, who says he hasn't spoken with anyone who is in favor of taking action.
If the United States of America doesn't do this, Senator, is it more or less likely that Assad does it again? You want to answer that question?
I don't think it's known. I don't think
is it more or less likely that he does it again?
You have the attack. I think it's unknown whether it's more
it's
or less
unknown.
Whether you have the attack.
Senator, it's not unknown. If the United States of America doesn't hold him accountable on this with our allies and friends, it's a guarantee Assad will do it again.
Secretary Kerry, you heard in the top of the hour news making the case today, that same case before the House Foreign Relations Committee. Here's House Speaker John Boehner. He's said he will support the action.
This is something that the United States as a country needs to do. I'm going to support the president's call for action. I believe that my colleagues should support this call for action.
Okay, so what is your opinion, River to River listeners? Are you buying President Obama's rationale here when you listen to President Obama, Kerry, and Boehner, or are you more on the side of Rand Paul? 1-866-780-9100, River to River at iowapublicradio.org, our email. Should the U.S. strike Syria, would you attach some sort of conditions, or should we stay out of this conflict altogether? 1-866-780-9100. We're on Facebook already. Some response on our Facebook page. What advice would you give to Congress? Don't is the answer, so far on our Facebook page. You can tweet us as well at IPR Talk. Well, we want to look, first of all, as we talk about the arguments a little bit later, pro and con of a strike, I want to first talk to you, launch this question to you, Jim McCormick. Why did President Obama choose to turn to Congress in this case?
Well, I think he was stunned, first of all, by what happened in the British Parliament last week. You know, by a 13-vote margin, the British Parliament, I think in a surprise to Prime Minister Cameron, opposed the use of any force. So the president, it seems to me, did not have the kind of international support. He had France, but virtually no one else. I mean, the United Nations, even though the British said they were going to take a resolution to the UN, you know, the Russians were likely to veto it. There was lots of ambivalence at home. And, you know, the public poll just before he made the announcement that was done by the Washington Post showed that 79% of the public would like the president to seek authorization from the Congress. I mean, in a very positive way, this is in where the public public makes a difference. And the support for a strike was really very mixed, very narrowly. A missile strike at that time was, I think, narrowly approved in the Washington Post poll, although the latest one that came out from Pew just yesterday suggests that the public is even more skeptical and not even a majority support.
In fact, I have the figures on that Pew poll.
Yeah.
48 to 29% margin.
Yeah.
More Americans opposing support.
Yeah, so there's been a movement towards more opposition as mm-hmm. it's become more politicized. So I think he found himself in a bit of a box here of acting unilaterally when there were a number of members of Congress calling for the president to get the Congress involved here. And I was taken by your you know, the quotation you had from the president, you know, that Congress has been sitting on the sideline. If I could just add one thing, most of the time presidents have decided to act on their own and not even considered Congress. Now, you can fault Congress for not, you know, holding up their part of Article 1, Section mm-hmm. 8 of the Constitution, but for the most time, and I looked up here, the Congressional Research Service put together a list of the times that the United States has used force since 1798, over 300 times. And a very rare number of those have involved the Congress. So,
but significantly, for instance, the Second World War.
Second World War. There have been 11 instances when the Congress actually authorized war against 11 countries. There's been 5 separate instances of declarations of war, but 11 countries were involved. There were also 2 resolutions that have been passed by the Congress in 1991 for the first Gulf War and the 2002 Iraq resolution authorized war from the Congress by the Congress. And then a third one we could put in was after 9/11 when there was the authorization to use force as well. But it's been a rarity in which the Congress has actually authorized the president to use force.
Mm-hmm. Chris Larimer, I want to turn to you for a little localized look at how this is playing out in Iowa politics. What can we glean today about how our elected representatives, our 2 senators, our 4 congressmen, have been saying about how they will vote?
Well, I think it's still a bit unknown. You know, CNN and Washington Post have been trying to compile a list of statements by various senators and representatives to try to get a sense of how they will vote. And at least my reading of it is that only Tom Latham has explicitly expressed that he will vote no against the use of force. So we have 5 out of the 6 from the Iowa delegation still in the unknown or undecided category. I think to pick up with what Jim was talking about, you know, it's kind of fascinating that Congress really was clamoring for this decision, because after the president initially announced he was going to move forward unilaterally, as you mentioned, there was a poll showing a vast majority of the public against any sort of action in Syria, Congress saying that the president should come to them, and now the president has gone to the Congress. And they're left with a very difficult decision. I was listening to a commentator this morning talking about how the American public seems to feel reassured when decisions like this go to the Congress. But if you think about it, that seems rather ironic when you think about approval of Congress. I mean, you know, the approval of Congress is usually right around 14-15%, and yet for some reason the American public seems to feel better when we leave this decision to that same institution.
I mean, do some people perhaps like – I mean, the president used the word sniping there. Nobody likes somebody sniping. And here it is a version of put your money where your mouth is, right?
Yeah, it really does almost feel like the president is trying to call out Congress on their bluff in a way.
Okay, let's get right to the phone. So what's your opinion on this? What message would you like to send to your congressman or your senators on possible military action, a strike in Syria? 1-866-780-9100. We're on Facebook. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Of course, use a good old email as well, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Matt in Des Moines, good afternoon to you. How do you feel about this, Matt?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I think my biggest issue is that we've had a wonderful record of mucking up in other countries, like take Iraq, for example. And I don't see how we should be viewed as the world police when we have the United Nations for this. And if they're saying, you know, let's not take action yet, let's hear the report from the chemical weapons inspectors, why do we feel the need to rush in and say, you know, without the United Nations support?
Okay, let's get an answer to that. Great question, Matt. Let's throw that to Jim McCormick. Why not use this machinery at the UN? And if it doesn't say go, why do we still want to go?
Ideally, I would very much favor using the United Nations. But, you know, given the structure of the Security Council and the veto power that Russia and China in particular have in this instance, I think that you'll have more of a debating society than any kind of action. And there really is a norm that has to be upheld. The United Nations in 2005 agreed upon something called the Responsibility to Protect Doctrine. When a country was involved in kind of ethnic cleansing or genocide or kind of mass killing, the international community said that they had an obligation to move beyond sovereignty to take action. Ideally, it should be the international community, but when these norms are so egregiously violated, I think there is a need for action.
Okay, our congressmen, our senators and representatives in Iowa, not really saying what they're going to do at this point. In the undecided category, we're seeing all across Congress, they're falling into four camps, at least for the moment, over this military action in Syria. Against, and we heard from Chris there in Iowa, Tom Latham, against in that category. The other categories, the other three, leaning no, undecided, and for military action. Let's listen to Iowa Congressman Bruce Braley of the 1st District at a town hall meeting yesterday. He said he was hesitant to vote to authorize military action against Syria.
It's important to know who you're supporting and who's supporting those rebels. You don't want to support someone who then ends up creating the type of complications we saw when Al-Qaeda moved into Iraq.
Iowa Congressman Bruce Braley. So, Jim, or rather Chris Larimer, let me go to you on this. Talk about perhaps the political calculus each representative in Iowa has to make on this issue. We have to consider public opinion, party affiliation, considering their own electorate if they're a representative in the 1st District, as in Braley's case.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The big one is public opinion. And, you know, to go back to talking about where the possible points of action are, I think we could almost add a fourth category, kind of the Lindsey Graham, John McCain category of expanded military action, not just sort of limited action.
Right. Saying they would be against it if it wasn't wide enough in the
right,
action.
Right, exactly. You know, I think for each individual member of Congress from the Iowa delegation, they are looking at public opinion. You know, they're trying to get a sense of what is the public looking for here. I think that the caller from Des Moines, Matt, illustrated it nicely, where you're talking about, is it national security? I mean, is there an immediate threat, or is the United States supposed to assume the role of world leader, where even if there's not an immediate threat, if there's a violation of those norms that Jim was talking about, the United States is expected to take action. And so right now, the public opinion on this is pretty clear. I mean, you know, the wars in Iraq, the wars in Afghanistan, or the war in Afghanistan, are both a very low priority for the American public right now. Prior to the Syria event, we were talking about the debt ceiling, government shutdown, healthcare, but mainly jobs and the economy. So another international crisis like this is going to be a pretty low priority for most Americans when you still have an unemployment rate over 7%. So I think for those individual members of Congress, they're struggling. Do you look at public opinion and just vote solely based on public opinion, or do you take a broader view and say the United States should act as sort of the world policeman and the world leader and uphold certain norms, even if no other country will?
Chris Larimer of the University of Northern Iowa with us, along with Jim McCormick of Iowa State University. We're asking you what message you would like to send to your congressmen or senators. And here's a tweet to us. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. Nate tweets, "I think if the U.S. gets involved, then it might unnecessarily escalate the violence. So I think we shouldn't get involved." Dan is joining us by phone from Des Moines. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
Great to have you.
I'd like to just point out a couple of things. And one of the things I'm going to point out is on the lines of the UN. One of the rationales that the president and Secretary Kerry are using is that we've crossed, you know, the quote-unquote red line of chemical weapons, and they were outlawed in the Geneva Convention. And this is, you know, an egregious violation of international law. But here we are looking at taking, once again, unilateral action by ourselves before the Security Council acts. Now, I know the international community, when it comes to the actual Security Council action, pretty much laughs at the Security Council because it's really difficult to get anything done with all the intermixed economic interests and all this stuff. But, I mean, 3 weeks, that's what I'm looking at, 3 weeks before the international community makes a decisive decision on whether or not chemical weapons were used. And that's all Russia's asking for. Now, I can't say that they're going to comply even after that. But at that point, if we have to take military action, if that's something that the president is dedicated to, I mean, at least we have the international community's deadline, you know, for accepting whether or not chemical weapons were mm-hmm. used. And at that point, we can make some kind of sound decision with international backing and not have the mistake made that we made when we went into Iraq, you know, which is not have really any international backing at all.
Okay, Dan, thank you. In Des Moines, Dan mentioned the red line, Jim McCormick. That's been often talked about, President Obama's utterance of a few months ago. Now we hear him in this latest cut saying, it's not my red line. It's a red line set by the international community. Is there a red line, Jim? Does it really exist?
Well, I think the president has sort of staked it out for himself. I mean, this was in August of 2012 when he first made that statement. Whether it was a calculated statement about the red line or not is at least, you know, some people have, you know, raised a question about that. But nonetheless, I do think, and it certainly is going to be brought up by his adversaries, that he made this statement and that he ought to act. And I think that is probably motivated, you know, I don't dismiss as part of his actions at the present time. So I do think it is probably more for the president, although certainly his effort to sort of socialize this conflict and to make it international and the international community responsible is, I think, in my view, really laudable, because I think the international community ought to stand up for these norms.
Okay. Sue is joining us in Dubuque. She dialed 1-866-780-9100. Hi, Sue. Your thoughts?
You know, I normally am not in support of military action unless every diplomatic avenue has been worn out and has not worked. But I think in this case, this was a very singular and very vile, really just an assault on human rights. And I would support the president's plan to do what needs to be done. And I applaud him for getting international support before anything is done. But I do, my comment is, I guess, that people are very gun shy because of the Iraq situation so many years ago. We had a president who stood at a podium in front of the country and basically made things up and said, we have to do this and we have to do it right now. And did it with no support from other countries and no real evidence that it even needed to happen. And You know, I watched John Kerry on Meet the Press, I think, Sunday morning, and he said over and over again, this is not boots on the ground. This is not Iraq. This is
Sue, some might say, you know, are you comfortable with an open-ended conflict? We don't know where these things can lead. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, everything is an open-ended conflict. I mean, you know, you have no guarantees when it comes to this kind of thing. But, you know, haven't we always been the protector of people in the international community? Have we not always been that conscience? And, you know, us being world leaders, don't we need to make a statement? We claim to be the greatest country and the greatest military in the world.
Okay, Sue, I think we've got it from you. Thank you very much for dialing in with your opinion. Let's go to Wilhelmina? Wilhelmina in Iowa City?
Yes.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Hi.
I noticed that we're very selective about our morality. We did not interfere with Rwanda. We've been watching the genocide of Israel of the Palestinians for 64 years. We didn't interfere there. And in fact, we helped it along. So why now? What's different now? Perhaps it's because it's something that Israel wants, and usually what Israel wants, Israel gets.
Okay, William, thank you for your... Wilhelmina in Iowa City, thank you for your view there. Jim, what about that? Is the president, when we look them back through intervention, being very selective here?
I do think the argument, you know, it's a good argument that the caller makes. I mean, it is very hard, and it has been hard over time for the United States to be consistent in its sort of, if you will, moral outrage in foreign policy and take action based on moral considerations here. I do not dispute the fact that, you know, we look the other way with regard to Rwanda and so on.
What makes Syria different in this case, at least in the eyes of this administration?
Well, I think, I mean, it goes back to the previous point. I think one thing, the president has put down a marker, and his reputation really is at stake. There was this kind of violation of this international norm, and I think he feels compelled to act. Syria is a much, you know, he did something in Libya. I mean, and I think he was trying to parallel action, but Syria is much more complicated than Libya ever was. I mean, because of the Russian connection and the Iranian connection, and Syria is important too because of Iran. I mean, we haven't even mentioned that, but part of this is a signaling mechanism. I hate to get sort of technical here about foreign policy, but I mean, you know, the failure to do something about Syria also has reverberations in terms of any threat behavior that might be that has been directed towards Iran.
Okay, we want to talk about that, the influence, the wider repercussions in the region, certainly a part of this too. Also, when we come back, we want to continue talking about this hot button issue, the Syrian possible intervention in Syria by the U.S. military. And President Obama's turning to Congress for congressional approval. Do you agree with the president's decision to seek congressional approval? Or do you see it as somehow diminishing the power of the presidency? We want to look at that also when we come back. 1-866-780-9100. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining us today, Jim McCormick, professor and chair of political science at Iowa State University. Chris Larimer is with us in our Cedar Falls studio, associate professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa. We'd like to have you join our discussion. What is the message you would like to send your congressmen, your senators? 1-866-780-9100. River to River, Politics Wednesday, back in just a few minutes. Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Syria dominating the political landscape on this Politics Wednesday. Joining us to with analysis. Jim McCormick of Iowa State University, Chris Larimer of the University of Northern Iowa. And you are very interested in this topic. We can see by our phone lines, by the tweets, also by the Facebook posts and emails that are coming in. We're going to try to get to as many of those as possible this half hour. Trying to also look at how Iowa's congressional delegation is coming down on the question of military action against Syria now that the president has turned to Congress to get its support or possibly not get its support. Let's go to our caller in Des Moines. Greg is with us in Des Moines. Hi, Greg.
How you doing, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for joining us.
I'm wondering, nobody's brought this up. I haven't heard anybody speak about it, whether it be Kerry or anybody else. Unless Assad is totally crazy.
So repeat that, Greg. You had a dropout there.
Yeah, I'm sorry. What I'm talking about is nobody has spoken to why why would he do this?
Okay.
Knowing what he has to know what the United States reaction would be.
All right.
And he has to know.
Okay, bad phone line, Greg. I know where you're going, though. Let's throw this to Jim. I've heard it on both sides. Why would Assad do this? The war seemingly going his way, at least not going in the way of the rebels, Jim McCormick, an odd time to pick to launch a gas attack that would stir up the international community, isn't it? Doesn't make sense, or does it?
No, it doesn't really make sense, but maybe for internal politics it does, in the sense that he had done this before and had kind of gotten off scot-free. I mean, there were rumors of this happening before, but the magnitude of this, I think, is what has set off, the United States and the international community. Because even though the international community has said they don't want to engage in this strike, they have condemned what Assad has done. I think the other reason was, and I think it's a plausible explanation, this was an area that was close to Damascus, that was hitting the downtown area, or hitting area that he had control over, and his forces had been unable to stop the opposition. Mm-hmm. So I think it was that sort of strategic, and given that it had been, at least to my mind, there have been reports of it using gas before, he thought that he could probably get away with it.
Tim is joining us from Riverside. Hi, Tim.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing fine. What's on your mind? Thank you for waiting.
Hey, we're a government of the people and for the people, and I believe the people are pretty clear on this, that they want nothing to do with it. How can our representatives not stand up and stand behind what we want?
Okay, Tim, let me back up your words with the latest Pew figures there. And then I want to toss it to Chris Larimer to again tell us a little bit about how our congressional delegation is feeling about this. In the latest Pew poll, where overall 48% to 29%, that's the margin, more Americans oppose than support conducting military strikes against Syria. And when we look to the party breakdown, just 29% of Democrats favor conducting airstrikes against Syria. 48% of Democrats opposed. Independents, very similar. 29 in favor, 50% opposed. Republicans, more divided. Very interesting here. 35% favoring, 40% opposed. Almost a split there. And Chris Larimer, the call there, Tim is saying, why can't many of our elected representatives here in Iowa tell us what they're going to do?
Well, I think, it kind of goes back to the earlier point about thinking about public opinion on this, in that, we know that economic interests right now are the top priority for most Americans. And for the issue with Syria, I think what the Obama administration is struggling with is showing that this is a clear threat to the United States, showing how this is clearly in the national security interests of the United States. They continue to say that. We hear Secretary of State Kerry saying that, the Obama administration saying that. But, the evidence, a lot of this is classified, but I don't think there's a clear connection for most Americans of how what happens in Syria, as horrible as it is, how that affects the national security interests of the United States, or how that presents an immediate threat to the United States. And I think that's where the Obama administration is struggling to make the case, and that's why public opinion is so against intervention at this point.
David in Grinnell writes, Bruce Braley's statement last week was interesting. We played that in our first half hour. Basically, writes David. He was in favor of action as long as President Obama sought congressional approval. He's pulled back quite a bit. I expect, writes David, that is due to people like myself telling him that an I favor vote will lose him our vote, Braley's vote, in 2014. Let's go to back to the callers. Joe is with us. Joe joining us from Fort Dodge. Hi, Joe. How do you feel about all this?
Yeah, I'm kind of coming in here right with what you're talking about there, where I think my representative, Steve King, will be all for this, provided the president's willing to pay for it. I mean, that's the problem with government right now. We go into these things and we don't pay for them. If we can have a war tax, or, like I say, if we could maybe have switch some of our 401ks out of Wall Street and into war bonds, I'd be all for it. And I think Steve King will be too. But It takes that kind of commitment from the nation. You can't just do what we tried to do in Iraq and send the people out to the shopping mall and say everything's going to be fine. We're at war, but don't worry about it. And I appreciate you taking my call, and I'll take whatever comments you have. I don't know how Steve King actually feels right now.
Right, maybe, Joe, I wanted to comment. We don't want to speak for the Congressman King, because to my knowledge, he's one we don't have a comment from. Or do you know of one, Chris Larimer or Jim?
No, I don't. But I think Joe raises a great point, and we're seeing more commentary about this, about how the politics of the intervention in Syria is mixing with the politics of the sequester from last year. If there is a call for intervention in Syria, will they roll back the sequestration from last year and the severe budget cuts that we're facing the military? There's a... And I guess more and more people are talking about the fact that certain members of Congress may try to link the two together. That is, if we decide to go forward with an authorization of the use of force in Syria, there has to be a pullback on the sequester or sort of refund parts of the military.
Derek in Iowa City writing to us, he's listening. How do senators and congressmen weigh public sentiment against their partisan and institutional political interests when a vote such as this comes up? We constituents get very exercised over hot issues. We send emails. We call into radio talk shows. Does any of it make a difference? Jim McCormick handled that one.
Well, I think, going back to what Chris said about the pull of public opinion on this, that is obviously weighing on the minds of members of Congress and certainly the Iowa delegation. But I also think there are a couple other things. I mean, partisanship is one of them. But I also think the presidency and the reputation of the country here. I mean, I think those kind of sets of factors play out. I was looking at the list that Chris referenced from CNN about where different people were, and it's kind of surprising to me that a very liberal senator from California, Barbara Boxer, has come out and staunchly supporting the president, because sort of ideologically, I wouldn't have expected on these questions of war and peace. That's where she would have been, but it's sort of political loyalty here, it seems to me, and a number of others, Steny Hoyer and Nancy Pelosi just yesterday, coming out. So there are these different kind of pulls here, aside from public opinion. But Congressman Braley obviously has a tough road to hoe here in terms of seeking the senatorial nomination and then the election and so on. And if in fact the public in Iowa, and I'm not aware of a public breakdown in Iowa, a public opinion poll breakdown in Iowa, but the public in Iowa is probably going to be very reflective of what the national polls show.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email from, I think it's Jean in Iowa City. She writes, "What is different about the situation in Syria is that they have used chemical weapons! This is intolerable. The president needs to put the responsibility back on the Syrian government. He needs to state absolutely they have a choice. They can choose to destroy all their chemical weapons, or we will destroy their chemical weapons so they cannot use them. If we do not make this statement," writes Gene, "and follow through, then we can expect Syria to use them again, and we can expect terrorists to start using them, and that is the end result of doing nothing." Now, that's Gene in Iowa City, 1-866-780-9100. It's a lose-lose situation, Michael tweets to us, but the consequences of inaction are far more grave. Would become a model for preserving dictatorship globally. That's from Michael. A lot of strong sentiment here. You know, we do political shows day in and day out, week in and way out. Jim and Chris, you're involved with many of these shows. I can't remember a show when we've had this many people weighing in, obviously very upset, and weighing in all over the spectrum. And it's really interesting here, isn't it, Chris Larimer, that the GOP here, it's almost like looking through a different political lens. So often we have had this partisan divide. Here we have, especially when we look at those numbers about GOP constituents and GOP leaders, Eric Cantor, John Boehner, mm-hmm. John McCain coming out here, mm-hmm. we have really a fractious look at the GOP, don't we, Chris Larimer?
I think we do, and you know, I think it relates to what the earlier caller was mentioning, and as far as how members of Congress make decisions, and as well as what Jim mentioned, you know, it is incredibly complex. You know, some political scientists will say that it really what drives a members of Congress decision-making process is that electoral connection, the idea of the next election. But I think also what you're seeing, rather than a partisan divide, is sort of a divide between short-term and long-term interests. Are there certain members of Congress who can take a broader, a long-term view of action in Syria, and they will maybe push for the United States to be more of a world leader, more concerned with the reputation of the United States? Or if you're a member of Congress that, for whatever reason, your reelection, your constituents, public opinion, you may have to take a shorter-term view and say, you know, I'm going to follow what's in public opinion polling and vote against intervention in Syria. So I think, you know, the short-term versus long-term doesn't necessarily follow right along party lines.
Jim McCormick, let me throw this to you, also along the lines of long-term view. How might President Obama's decision to have Congress vote on this, and you named the very few instances in which a president has turned to Congress in such instances throughout history, how might his turning to Congress for this vote affect the power of the presidency at home and abroad?
Well, I think it'll rein it back in, and which, just personally speaking, I'm very much in favor of. I mean, I always have thought that the Congress have sort of been dereliction of duty in terms of some of their foreign policy responsibilities here. Whether that will really stop the president from acting, because I basically think, and I don't know, we're going to maybe get to this, but I think the president's going to still win this vote. I think it's going to be very hard, despite what public opinion says, for the Congress to deny, you know, the president on a world stage from taking action. So I think there will be if he were to lose, there would be some diminution of presidential authority. But I think the members of Congress would quickly come out and say that they would want to bolster the president if there were really a direct attack on national security. It goes back to what Chris was saying earlier. I mean, the case for how is this a direct threat to the United States? How is it a national security? The national security interest of the United States probably has not been made, and maybe the president can yet make it.
Jeffrey in Des Moines, winding up our hour. I want to get back to callers. So many callers, so many emails, Facebook posts. Jeffrey in Des Moines, what's on your mind?
Oh, I was just going to say, I would tell my members of Congress that we need to move away from our permanent war economy and to embrace diplomacy as a country. I think, you know, the statement that a country can only have credibility if it bombs somebody sounds like a sort of aging member of the Sopranos or something who threatened to break somebody's leg. I mean, this doesn't really befit a country that's on an upside, but actually a country that's on a decline. I think it's more of a statement of, you know, where we are. I think we should build Detroit and Cleveland and start worrying about the problems in this country rather than bombing in other countries and invading other countries.
Okay, thank you very much for your view, Jeffrey in Des Moines, 1-866-780-9100. I'd like your view on this, because the president has been criticized in this case, too, by some for doing what they would call a 180-degree turn on the military intervention question, making arguments, and I think this criticism was especially voiced before he turned to Congress late last week, that he's making arguments now that he criticized as a candidate when George W. Bush made them. Is that a valid criticism, Jim McCormick?
Well, my view is that, you know, the president has really found it difficult to find his real stance on foreign policy and what kind of a end that he wants to produce here. I mean, he certainly came into office in a very optimistic way, idealistic way, if I could say so, in terms of the kind of design that he has. But But there has been, I think it's justifiable to say that there has been a fair bit of indecisiveness on actions that have been taken, and obviously accentuated in the Middle East with Egypt and Syria most recently.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, Jim, how does this affect our relationship with Russia? They are dead set against intervention in Syria as a Syrian ally.
Well, I don't think we'll be signing a new START agreement very quickly here,
right?
With Russia. I think it does sour the relationship, but probably it puts it on a more, as the Russians like to say, a more businesslike relationship, because we obviously still have some differences of value differences with them, and we're not particularly pleased with what Putin has done internally.
A Facebook post from Keith in. I'm against action in Syria now. Syria's actions are reprehensible, but they are not a real threat to the U.S. Using chemical weapons is illegal, but it's not the responsibility of the U.S. to enforce international law. That's up to the U.N. military intervention. Without U.N. approval, it is itself illegal. I have other concerns as well, not least of which is that I simply don't know if such an action will be effective. And that's a real open question. We have seen in past years an action in Iraq, in Afghanistan, where you go in with a certain theory about what will happen if you do this, and really you don't know. And we don't have a military analyst on this program to tell us. We have political analysts to talk about the political ramifications of this. I want to ask, before we end the show, Chris Larimer and Jim McCormick, over the next few days, what should we be paying attention to? What will you be looking for as this Syrian situation develops and Congress? What is the next step here, Chris Larimer?
Well, I think the next step, you know, is occurring right now, where this is going through the committee process in the House and the Senate. We saw the Senate Foreign Relations yesterday and the House Foreign Affairs Committee today with Secretary of State John Kerry and Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel testifying. So I think, you know, over the next few days, it will be interesting to see, you know, what sort of proposals are put forward. I think there was one put forward just today in the Senate that John McCain has decided he was going to vote against because it doesn't go far enough. So I think it'll just be curious to see how this plays out, to see if we see more members of Congress actually taking firm stances on specific proposals that are put forth in each chamber. Whether Congress decides to act before they come back September 9th, I think, you know, that's what adds even more nuance to this situation is that the president has put this off to Congress while Congress is on recess, and they don't seem to be in any rush to get back from recess to really engage in this decision. And so I think that's what I'm going to be watching for the next few days.
Jim McCormick, what about you?
Well, I think I'll be looking at sort of the wording of the resolution that is created in either the Senate or the House, the Senate one right currently. I suspect that to garner enough support, they're going to have to put the president on a fairly short leash, not like the resolutions that the Bush administration received, with the statement probably about no American boots on the ground or maybe some wiggle room on that. The second thing I'm going to look for is, when is the president going to speak to the nation and sort of lay out the case that I think, frankly, that Secretary of State John Kerry last Friday did rather brilliantly. If the president can sort of recapture that moment, I don't think he can turn all, you know, public opinion on its head, but I think he can get a narrower kind of difference here and give, therefore, members of Congress some leeway in terms of backing the president.
Mm-hmm. There have been reports, Jim, that the United Kingdom sold chemical weapons to Assad, that a natural gas pipeline is the real motivation for striking Syria. Have you been
I haven't seen that. That's a surprise to me. I don't know. Maybe Chris has something on that.
No, I haven't seen that either. That would be very interesting and very surprising.
A couple minutes left. Let's go to Carol in Mason City, our last caller for today. Hi, Carol.
Hi.
Go ahead, please. Thank you for calling in.
Okay, thank you. I'm just calling to say that we're really showing short-sightedness when we're saying, well, what's the United States involvement going to be? I think the real question is, do we want chemical weapons to be a conventional weapon that will be used against our soldiers or within our country in the next conflict that we get into? The 400 children that were killed over there with chemical weapons could just as well have been 400 children in a United States school. Then would that make it important enough to do? I don't think we want chemical weapons to become a normal weapon used in any conflict.
Okay, Carol, thank you for that view from Mason City. And there you have it, Jim, what you were mentioning before. People not only taking the view, the shorter view or the long view, obviously, Carol there with a longer view in how to come down on this. And when we consider this, I wonder what is the next step on the Senate resolution? This seems to be a focus in Washington.
Well, I think on the Senate, what they'll probably have to sort of haggle about is, putting the kind of time limit on it, and maybe even the kind of strike that the United States could engage in, so that to assuage those who see this as sort of getting into a quagmire. I mean, I think that has to be put off the table. I mean, a Secretary of State, he wanted to be president, but Secretary of State Kerry, said that he wanted to close that door. I think also, and we haven't gotten back to this point, but the longer-term ramifications in terms of Iran here, we mentioned Russia, but we never really got back.
Quickly, we have about 30 seconds. Can you sum that up, and then we'll maybe
I think, we have set down sort of markers on Iran. We also have talked about a red line with regard to Iran. If they could have a deliverable nuclear vehicle here. And so I think that what this instance also fits into that discussion, seems to me.
Okay,
sorry, Jim, to be short-winded.
No, we'll have plenty of time for more wind on politics. We always do on Wednesday. Thank you, Jim McCormick of Iowa State University, Chris Larimer of the University of Northern Iowa. Thank you both, gentlemen.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Ben Stanton, Sarah Bowden, and Emily Woodbury. Help today from Jason Burns and Ames, Tony Daner in Cedar Falls. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.